I think we're ready to start. So, Oliver, I'll let you start off and get us started.
Okay. Good morning, Commissioners. Oliver Ojako, Community Planning Director. Commissioners, I think I will start. This is the second work session on the guiding principles and the planning commission planning assumptions for the 2016 plan update. Let me allow our city partners to sit down. I'm sure some of other city partners are going to be showing up. But again, this is the second work session we're having with the commissioners, and the first one was on April 16. So what I will do today, the goal today is for the board to direct county staff and our city partners to move forward with the decisions or direction you will be giving us today on the guiding principles and the planning assumptions, so that we can move to development of land use scenarios that we are going to come back to the board for your approval in terms of the allocation and what the land use scenarios is going to look like. So what I will do quickly is just go over some of what I have discussed with the commissioners the last time we met, some of that is just going to be for you to confirm, or for us to say, yeah, we confirm, here's what the board already confirmed, and then briefly talked about the planning assumptions, the ones that I think we may have conversation on and get direction from the board quickly. And then the cities are here to chime in. This planning assumptions is one that the county and the cities work closely together to arrive at. Majority of the planning assumptions are evidence-based. I have Bob Poole here from our GIS who have worked with this on the VBLM side for over 20 years now. So I can say confidently that the model is very stable. Does it need to be continuously visually inspected and make changes where appropriate? Yes. So with that, I will move to where we are to date. We have some shake-off items that have already been completed on column 2. We are now beginning discussion with our city partners on the growth allocation based on the decisions that the commissioners have made on population and jobs. So we are now discussing the planning assumptions and one direction on the, from the board, so that the cities and the counties can begin to, again, have some bookends on what the land use scenarios is going to look like, so that when you put the puzzles together, we begin to see what the pictures look like, and then compare that picture to the guiding principles and the planning assumptions that you've given us direction on. We also simultaneously, we have the 2014 inventory, land use inventory completed using the vacant buildable lands model. The output of that 2014 is out. We have asked the cities to visually inspect the reports and the maps and anyone else, and they have until May 27th, I believe, to get back to the county so that Bob Poole and his staff can publish the report officially for the 2014 vacant buildable lands report. So that's where we are. I will also add that community planning staff are beginning to develop technical reports on relevant planning elements like land use, housing, transportation, and economic development. Those technical reports are being worked on. The next slide shows the 2005 board principles and values. What will come out of our discussion will be the 2016 guiding principles. What we have done is, as you can see on the left column, is very wordy. That's how it was developed in 2005. What we did with staff is to categorize those statement in topical areas that I believe makes it much easier for staff and the board to walk through. The key to this is anything that we've checked off and you're going to see strike out, those have already been completed, and we believe we should be not consider them in the 2016 guiding principles. Where we have a question mark, we've gone through some of this with the board. I think what we had last time was we retained some of them and not delete them. So that's how this is structured. In terms of employment land principles, I think this is very straightforward. What this means is that, for example, we want to, in working with the cities, to equalize jobs and new population growth ratio so that cities will have equitable share of both new growth and new jobs. That's really the main guiding principle here. For housing, I think the cities will agree. I'm recommending that we delete item 2. This is something that the cities and the counties have worked on since the beginning of the growth management planning process, that each city must meet their allocated density of tiered density system that the county and the cities agreed to, and that could be done by providing a variety of housing mix. It could be accomplished by whether it's condominium, townhouses, duplexes, triplexes, however the city wants to accomplish that. So our staff is recommending that we no longer begin to continue to talk about density and what the cities need to do. Community design, I think staff is also recommending that we know that we are going to continue to look at innovative zoning techniques. We tried that in the Highway 99 area when we developed that sub-area plan, and then the board adopted a form-based zoning. There are other communities here, cities, that have also gone to performance zoning approach. So this is something that have already been accomplished. Staff is recommending that that be not included in the 2016 guiding principles. For rural lands, I think the item number 2, if I may say broadly, is what got the county in trouble the last go around. So I'm recommending that we delete 2 and 3. On 2, we did, making argument on economic balance, economic development or balancing goals, we brought in a couple of properties that were zoned for agriculture and for economic development or for jobs versus agricultural preservation, we weren't successful. So I'm recommending that item 2 and 3 not be part of the 2016 guiding principles. On the critical environmental principles and values, we all, and when I say we, I mean the county and the cities, all have critical area ordinances that have been approved through Department of Ecology based on best available science. So our development regulation is adequate to address critical areas. On other land use principles and values, we will maintain 1, 2, and 3. Staff is recommending that we delete 4. It talks about us building on work that was done in the 04 plan in terms of map proposal. So that's not necessary.
Oliver, could you back up 2 slides? There. We're scratching off those, like, in other words, we're not going to consider those, is what you're recommending?
Yes, Commissioner, because our development regulation on critical area ordinance covers this already.
Oh, in other words, it's already covered elsewhere.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So we are embracing those principles to make sure that whatever land we set aside is actually developable in a practical, economical way.
Yes. And our development regulation captures whatever we need to do to protect critical areas. On tax base, I think this is very universal. We had a question mark on item number 3, and I think we heard from the board that we need to retain the tax base principles and values in terms of how we look at whether it's land for job, residential areas, making sure that where practical that there is equitable tax base or that our land use results in equitable tax base for all the school district. I mentioned before that last time that this is going to be hard to do where we have some schools district that are not in any urban growth area. I mentioned Green Mountain School District and Hawkinson School District, not in any UGA, so it would be very difficult to designate industrial land or commercial land within those school districts. But we will do our best where practical to make sure that the way we zone both commercial and industrial land is as equitable as it can be within the school districts. In terms of mapping implication, I think this is very obvious. And this, again, gets us to the flexibility that we've talked about with our local jurisdiction. Number one there talks about the center needing a greater economic diversification opportunity. And this is something that the city of the center, you had the mayor talked about last time he was here. This is something that the city of the center and their city council will be working through using this guideline to make any changes that they will be making to their UGA before they submit it to the county. Richfield, we know, is making progress. We know the topography in Richfield, and they are aware of this issue that they also will have to work to see how they will be meeting the single family and multi family split, 25-75-25 single family and multi family split. They have to work hard on that themselves. Outside the city limits of Richfield, we, the county, in working with the city, has some control over the unincorporated area until those areas are annexed, but we really don't allow or zone some of those outlining or areas that ring the city limits of Richfield, any other cities with multi-family zoning and so forth. So this is something that the city and the community will have to work on meeting. Vancouver, they've done this before in terms of looking at the Vancouver UGA, job-producing urban reserve land need to be included in the boundary. We did this in 04, in 94, and 07, and will continue to do that. So there is no need to do that. I talked about Commerce. Commerce is aware of this issue, and they are doing whatever they can within their city limits, working with their council and their community to be very flexible in the way that they zone and making provision for townhouses, condominium, and other type of housing mix within their community. So we don't need this. As I mentioned earlier, we are very aware that when we prepare the inventory using our model, that we have to also work with our city partners and others in grant-routing the result to make sure that it is actually reflecting what is on the ground. And again, those visual inspections and working with the assessor's office to look at how they're assessing certain properties and making changes, that's what number five is really talking about. The other issues are self-explanatory. We try it as much as we can to bring lands in where necessary, making sure that we do not bring land that are overwhelmed with environmental constraints. And we'll continue to recognize the significance and importance of the County Railroad Corridor and plan in such a way that we utilize that asset. That, in a nutshell, summarizes the guiding principles, and when we get into the allocation, the issue there gets us into, again, grant routing and using the guiding principles to work with the cities in our allocation process. Where I want to dwell before I leave this, I want to make sure that I captured the previous conversation that I had with the board. If you have any questions on any of this, I'll take them before I move to the planning assumptions.
Oliver, the list that you went through basically was the 2005 list with modifications, right? So there's still opportunity over the next several weeks or so for us to be able to submit additional bullet points to be able to, for us to consider in this process that would, for instance, pay attention to the competitiveness of our area to maximize free market principles when it comes to economic development, for employment, those kinds of things.
The board can submit that. I still have to share it with the our cities for them to also weigh in, because this is something that we work in coordination with our city partners. Sure, the board can submit something to us within the next week. We have about a month or so to complete the allocation process, but we need that guiding principle to help us in our discussion with the cities before we come back for your approval.
And I assume also that because we want to be able to maximize the flexibility of each of the cities within Clark County, that we don't necessarily want to assert that our guiding principles, every one of them, must be adopted by the cities. We want to be able to recognize their guiding principles that may be a little bit different than ours.
That's true. One of the major areas where we have to be consistent with the city is the countywide planning policies, which we all also all endorsed or approved through their own council and through our commissioners. But this is what I call the bookends, the guiding principles for us in terms of mapping, in terms of land use, in terms of saying, okay, when the city submits their plan to the county and the city and we put all that puzzles together, when we do our environmental review, can we be able to ascertain or confirm that land use matches this values or these principles or guidance? That's really what the guiding principles, that's the function of that. It's very similar to a movie rating. When you see a movie, you color it full moon, half moon. That's how we're going to be looking at our land use, to say how does that match with the guiding principles.
And are we communicating to each of the cities as well, to the invitation for them to submit their own particular guiding principles for us to be able to make sure we pay attention to them?
My answer to that will be that will come to us through the land use that they submitted to the county, and we will be the one in conjunction with the cities reviewing that land use to say yes, it comports with And they will have to go through their own processes as well, whatever their vision for their community is and what their aspirations are. Again, at the end of the day, as I said and continue to say, this is kind of like a puzzle or a picture. The cities are going to be submitting each of their puzzles, and we're going to put it together and look at what does that picture represent.
And I think everything that we've communicated thus far has been one of a good neighbor, one that's goodwill, that one that wants to accommodate and maximize the flexibility of each city to be able to do things the way in their jurisdiction, the way they want to, within the limits of the law.
That's correct, Commissioner. Okay. That gets me to the planning assumptions, and I won't dwell so much on this slide. It's too wordy, but what to get out of this is that the GMA requires the county and the cities to monitor growth through the buildable lands report. That's section 3670A215. It is a report that goes to the state 1 year prior to the adoption of the plan update and whatever else we are doing. This section of the statute requires that if we prepare this report and look at actual development that have occurred on the ground, and that is what we are seeing is a little bit different from the assumptions that went into the development of that plan. The local jurisdictions and counties, decision makers, have the obligation to first consider what reasonable measures need to be taken to get you closer to your assumptions before you make any significant changes. Yes, Commissioner?
That first bullet point has to do with history, and the second bullet point has to do with future based on that history.
Yes, so in other words, what does this report inform you to do going forward? So we are going to maintain that. Community planning staff is currently working on that report, and we will share it with the cities because they provide us most of the input that goes into that report, actual development that have occurred in each of their jurisdiction. They are sending us building permit information on a monthly basis, so we have it since 2000. We can go back 8 years, 10 years, whatever, but we have that information. It comes to us monthly, and we will use that information to prepare this report, and also looking at the assumptions that went into the development of the plan over the past years to see how well we are doing.
And I assume that that is not just a list kind of a format, but that, Bob, you're making use of that when it comes to tying that into GIS so we can visualize that on the map, right?
That's part of it, and Ken Perot, who is sitting behind there, is also the county designated demographer. So we are working with him and ESD, Scott Bailey, when it comes to employment and densities and all those type of information. So all that is prepared as part of this report, and it's made available with the input from the cities, and they review it before we send it to the state. We are obligated to coordinate that effort and use information from the cities. The first time we did this, the state gave us money to be able to make our permitting system linking with our local jurisdiction so that they can electronically send us the information. We don't have to go and sit down and start looking through their files. So we have put in some mechanism in place to enable us to do that.
The focus of my question really has to do with the integration,
yes,
with our GIS so that we can visually connect the map to that development history.
Yes, that's true. Yeah, that's true. Okay. The last bullet there is something also required by the state statute. We are required to use the Office of Financial Management Population Projections and coupled with other directions from the commissioners, and that includes the planning assumptions, your guiding. The guiding principles is not required by GMA, but at least it gives us opportunity to be able to compare what we are doing to your values and the community values as well. This is very, very critical because it will give the city some certainty on and county staff some certainty on the allocations that we are now discussing with the cities. What are the planning assumptions for 2016 update? The first column there are the assumptions that we have used over the years, and the second, third, fourth, and now fifth column are the years in which we have applied each of the planning assumptions for the plan update that we have done over the years. The 20-year population projection, the board have already made decision on that, and the first column there just shows what the OFM range is in each of those planning period from the low to the high, and each time the board have fall within the middle. 2016, you've already made a decision that we plan for the medium range population from OFM. What that entails on the second column is the number of new folks we are expecting during the planning horizon. You can see the numbers over the years. The third column there is on those number of new folks that the county is planning for or anticipated to move into Clark County, what percentage of that growth should be in the urban area and what percentage of that should be in the rural area. You can see in 94 it was 81-19, and since 2004 the board have made that as a policy call on to be 90-10 in 04, in 07, and we are asking the board to retain that in 2016. What the current ratio is, if you look at number of units in the rural area compared to the urban area, the number of units currently in the urban area is 87% and 13% in the rural area. If you convert that into population, the ratio is 86-14 based on population. So that is very close to the 90-10 split that the board have directed us to use going forward. Again, I'm asking the board to retain the 90-10 rural and urban split.
And Oliver, those numbers are all county-wide, include both incorporated and unincorporated areas, right?
Yes.
So each city can have their own component that's going to vary from that.
No.
When it comes to the single family versus the multifamily.
No, this one gets you to total number of new folks that will be residing in the urban area and the number that will be residing to, if you take that 136 or call it 137, you said 90% of that will have to be allocated to the urban area, which includes the cities and the areas within their UGA, and 10% of that 137 will go to the rural area. So what the board should really be concerned is saying, every time you go through the plan update and you want to put in 10% of that growth going to the rural area, do I have the capacity to make sure that that could be accommodated within the rural area? That's where the commissioner should be focusing on. And at least we can say now that there are room in the rural area to accommodate the 10% of the growth going forward. And again, this is when we do the plan monitoring report, or the report that I mentioned before, we monitor this as well. It is something that the board will continue to look at to say at what point will we then be making changes to the rural area in terms of adding additional lot if the statute allow us to do so.
Looking at the housing type ratio, the second one from the bottom.
Second one from the bottom, this does not apply to the rural area. This second one only applies to the city,
okay.
only to the urban area. Yes, sir. The board have already made a decision on the 2.66 for persons per household, so we are just confirming that. That's why we're highlighting that. You can see what it has been over the years. This change was prompted because of the information from the 2010 census and what we are currently seeing, that people are doubling up for whatever reason, maybe the recession, and we are aware that kids that have left home are returning back home. So there have been increase in persons per household. This is an average countywide, and we're asking that we make the change based on that new information. Like I said earlier, this is all evidence-based type of changes that we're recommending, where we think it makes sense to do.
Oliver, so basically that bottom right corner, the 2.66, is just recognizing what the census has informed us. It's not a projection.
Yes.
Not a goal. It's just saying that's what they told us the real world is today.
Yes. Okay. And the next time you do the plan update in the next 8 years, it may go up, it may go lower, depending, and then you can change it as well. But that's what they're informing us today. The second... this slide shows, again, decisions that the board have made already. You've made a decision on new jobs. We are just confirming that. And the third column is just staff recommendation that we move away from the way we measure the number of new folks that we are projecting for, as well as the number of new jobs, that they be measured in terms of jobs to household. So you've already made that decision that it should be one-to-one going forward. And it is a good aspiration, but we'll see how well we do going forward on that. The other area that they've been interested in making a change to is the infrastructure deduction. I highlighted that, and the interest there is primarily due to the recent changes in the stormwater regulations. What I have done is I've asked our Department of Environmental Services to chime in on this conversation and interest. I have a memo from Ron Waringer, and I can provide this to the commissioners. What I'm really asking the board to do is to retain the 27.7 or 27.5% for infrastructure deduction. This include road, stormwater, parks, schools. The report that, or analysis that DES provided me, there have been studies, and I can make this available to the board, 2010, 2012, and 2006, that is confirming that the amount of area devoted for infrastructure or stormwater is really getting smaller and smaller due to new technologies, and the fact that some of the new LIDs, when done properly, some of them are being put into right-of-ways that is requiring less land devoted for infrastructure, if you will. He also looked at King County, 12% for public facilities that include drainage facilities, park, and schools. For P.S. County, a city in P.S. County, Pacific, they are at 0.19% for stormwater facilities that also include park and schools. Another city, the city of Berkeley, also located in P.S. County, is at 20%. Multnomah County is less than 15%. So when you look at all these counties, again, I've made this clear that some cities, some areas drain better than others, but on average, what we are seeing is below 20%. So he also looked at a series of subdivisions that I've already developed or recently developed, 2013, majority of these were all in 2013, and the average is below 7% according to their study. They also looked at apartment and commercial and arriving at the same number. I also asked Ken Perot from our GIS staff to look at similar development that have occurred over the years. For residential, he's showing me about 20% road, stormwater facilities. For apartment, it's like 9%, and for commercial, 14%. So on the average, it's below 20%. I know this have come up before because of the new stormwater reg. The best way to look at this is the percentage we are using now is large compared to other areas. I know that I've asked the cities as well to provide me information that could inform us one way or the other whether this needs to be changed. I have received information from the city of Washougal, and you know their area drained a little bit differently, and from the information that they submitted, they're telling me that our 25% or more is higher than what they're seeing in their area. Again, this is going to vary, but the current 27.5 or 27.7 is really large. The way to look at it is, take for example, if you need 500 acres, and I'm using this just to illustrate my point, and you add in 27.57% on top of that, that is about 138 acres on top of the 500. So now you're talking about maybe 637 or 638 acres is what you need. When you develop that property and your infrastructure is coming in at 20% or 15%, it means you have too much. That's really what this number is illustrating. And I'm asking the board to retain the current 27.7% for infrastructure deduction, and as we begin to develop our new stormwater reg, and over time, I don't know, the cities are here, maybe they will chime in on this. I've asked them also to let me know what they're seeing. Maybe the information they will send us on May 27 will confirm that. But for now, we are asking that we retain the 27.7%, because what we've seen, even in our own development, is really coming in below 20%. When we go through the new stormwater reg, we will have additional information to inform us whether to change this or not. So that's my recommendation.
Oliver, I agree with that. We're basically being conservative to make sure we have enough room to include everything that needs to be included in each development. So we're talking about surface area.
Yes. Okay. The final area that I highlighted, and Bob is here, is the definition of how we define what is vacant and what is underutilized in terms of residential, commercial, and industrial. I highlighted this because the board had interest in us taking a look at this to see whether there is any need to change those definitions. We know that assessment, there is time lag in the way we assess things and the way that in assessment and the way that our assessors also assess properties, particularly those areas where you have a building and a parking lot. Where do they put that value when they assess that property? So I can say in general that because we've had experience with this model for over 20 years, that our model appeared to be stable. Is there a need or room to continue to look at this definition? I would say yes. What would that be? It's hard to say, but I think I have confidence in the way we are in the current definition. And Bob is here, maybe he will chime in on this. But I'm recommending that we retain the values that we are currently using. Maybe in due time, maybe in the next go around, we will have opportunity to further refine this based on time and information from. Right now, I think it will be difficult for us to recommend that we change this value. So I'll let Bob chime in. Yes, sir.
Maybe you could give I need a better definition for market factor.
Okay, Commissioner, for market factor, look at it in the same way that I described the infrastructure deduction. What the market factor does is, I call it a fudge factor, or again, when you're sizing the urban growth boundary, if you determine that you need 10 acres, what the market factor does is this is a fudge factor that you add in. This is in addition to what you really need to be able to stabilize, you know, housing price or price of lands. In other words, there may be some properties that may be tied up for a variety of reasons, but if you add additional cushion, look at it as adding additional cushion to, if you need 100 acres, you add additional 10% of on top of that to allow you for flexibility within the boundary. That's what really market factor does for you. If it gives some fluctuation in the marketplace and provide room so that the boundary is not tight, it's not too tight to really cause increase in housing price or price of land. So that's what this additional land, more of a cushion.
That's a pretty dramatic change going from 2004, 50% in commercial industrial, or 50% industrial. Bro.
Yeah, in 07, and there was a reason and there was a history behind that. When we did the 50 in 94, the county did 50. We challenged on that. That was too high. Too high. Studies have shown that anything between 10%, 15%, 20% is reasonable. And we went for 50%. So if you need 100 acres for industrial land, we went for 150. And we were called on it because those that were smarter than the county staff believed that this number was really extremely high, and the only way that the county and the cities could correct for that was to come back and put in, that was the origin of the no net loss on industrial land policy, and it was very, very hard to implement. So that was the reason, based on the court and growth board ruling, that we went for a reasonable number.
So you make a compelling case that 50% is too high. But how do we know that 0% is not too low? Why aren't we around 10 or 15% as you indicated, a more reasonable number?
For residential, they believe that the 10% is right. For commercial and industrial, they said you don't need any. That was their ruling, and we tried to comply with that going forward, because we know that the industrial land is going to develop. We know the commercial land is going to develop. The issue was not to really put too much pressure on your housing price, and price of your residential land was really the consideration at the time.
Over that number, to me, is like in reverse. It's saying that we need more commercial land where before we thought that we had enough. And it's related to our jobs, because we didn't have enough area, residential or industrial or commercial, to provide those jobs. So that's the way I understand it. What the number we're saying, we need that much more. or are we? No, we don't have any extra.
The way that I understand the caution or the ruling, and I know James Housley is here, is that there were areas where, for a variety of reason, Townry was rezoning properties from industrial to residential or to commercial, and I would say bluntly, the assertion was that the only reason the county, and particularly Clark County, when compared to what other counties have done and what percentage they use, was that our residential, our commercial and industrial land was residential land in disguise. And I think the board at the time, and I'm hoping this board will really take that and recognize that when you're sizing the boundary, particularly for those commercial or job land that you know are going to develop, the emphasis will be to make sure that we are bringing in lands that are free of environmental constraints that we know that are going to develop. And that is more, that makes more sense and more practical than really adding more land to your inventory, because eventually that's going to develop and you have to be able to justify it, not only justifying it in terms of your capital facilities, but your ability to also pay for it through the capital facilities planning process. So that was part of the reasoning that when we look at this, the first thing we have to do is to ask ourselves, based on the current boundary and based on the current inventory, do we have enough commercial and industrial land to accommodate the job that we are planning for? And at the same time, for the smaller cities, allow them the flexibility to plan their communities the way that they see fit. So that's really what the policy and the direction should be. If we change any of this, and this will be a call for the board, on the commercial and industrial, they're going to ask us for where is the development regulation to make sure that this land will be truly for commercial and or for job development. So that's another angle of this.
All right. I'm still confused. I thought I understood kind of where it was. But our big push now is to create jobs. In the creation of jobs, we recognize that we did not have enough industrial or commercial property. And so that's what we're reaching out to do. For example, the Lagler large enough parcels for industry. And other parcels along the I-5 corridor. So that's our goal, our reach today is to create more in the St. John's area by having more accessibility with the infrastructure in place too. And one thing that we have that we didn't have before is our GIS overlay. And we've come to learn that because we're so wet here, the buildable land is closer to 50%, so we need to concentrate more on the use of buffer areas. What we can do, not what we can't do, because we could build in one site. I guess Fishers is a real good example. It really utilized a wet area with a small footprint for buildable, but they used the rest of it for parking and other things. So those are things that I think that we can do by being smarter in the way we develop.
And I want to make sure I understand that if we have 0% on jobs land, and that means we have zero pad. If we add, if we say that's 10% or 15%, then we have extra set. We're setting a little bit more aside for employment land. Correct.
Commissioner, this is for sizing of, yes, you're right, for sizing of the urban growth boundary. This is for sizing of the urban growth boundary.
Sure.
So when you determine how much land you need, in this case for Job, what the board should be asking staff is to do is look at the inventory that was recently completed, work with the cities in terms of the visual ground truthing of that, and ask the question, do we have enough commercial and industrial designated land to accommodate the job that we are planning for? If the answer is yes, if we add a cushion, which is the function of the market factor, then we also have to be able to say, yes, we are adding this more, but we also have some mechanism in our development regulation or policy to make sure that that land is truly going to be devoted for...
Yeah. So we would couple those together. So
yes.
If we want to make sure that we're committed to setting aside enough land, and the main factor I think that we're thinking here is that much of the land is either sloped, which doesn't lend itself to commercial buildings with that size, with the size footprints, or it's wet, or it's going to be more costly to develop. And if we have zero in there, it says we're going to constrain ourselves to, well, it's going to just going to become less competitive. So I'm inclined to bump that number, that 0% for jobs, up to like 10 or 15%. That moves us in the area of, and coupling that with the commitment that that's not going to turn into residential. That is set aside for jobs, and it takes into account the land geography that makes it more buildable.
Over, if we use a number of 0%, that means that we don't need to go out and develop any industrial. Is that correct? Or does that mean that we have zero available?
Commissioner, the zero, what the zero means is if we determine, for example, today that we only need 5,000 acres for job land, that's all we're going to designate in the sizing of the urban growth boundary. That's how much. Whether that 5,000 is net, because you got to look at this in terms of, and I don't want to get into conversation of net versus gross, but if you determine that for the job that we are planning for in the future, we only need 5,000 acres, let's say for industrial land, what the market factor will do, if you change this, will say, I need additional 10% on top of that when I size the boundary. That's what the function of the market factor does. But given the history that I just described briefly, we were dinged on using a number that is way beyond what some studies have shown and what other communities have used when sizing their urban growth boundary. So what we can do is whatever, if you ask us to use 5, 10, it's going to be your call. We're going to be working with the cities to say, okay, here's the direction from the commissioners that we need to, in this go-around, add 5 or 10% or whatever that number is, anything within a reasonable number that can be defendable. That's why we moved from the previous number was just, wasn't really, there was no evidence that 25 and 50 is the number that we should use. It was a number that was worked out between the environmental community and the development community in 94. That number, that assumption was challenged, as I indicated, which prompted the country to begin to move towards what is more reasonable.
When we reached out and we picked a high number for employment, that number there would indicate that we have enough land inside the urban growth boundary to provide those jobs?
My quick answer would be yes, but I'm hesitant to say so, because what the zero says is look inside, how many acres do you need? If you need 100 acres, all you're going to provide is 100 acres. If you put a market factor, which is a cushion, which is a forge factor, which is I wanna add more land into my mix or into in sizing of the urban growth boundary. Instead of 100 acres, I'm going to need 110 acres or 120 or 150, depending on what percentage you use. Then you add in more land and your urban growth boundary is going to be much larger. What the growth board and the court ruled that was that if you need 100 acres, why do you plan for 150? That was their argument, that you don't need the 50 acres because you've already determined how much you need. Adding that additional 50 acres makes your boundary too big, and that it gives you the opportunity over time to change those land to other different uses. That was their argument.
So as we move forward with this, I think we're going to be relying on the cities to show us, and we have a model of so many acres, so many jobs per acre on the types of industry or business that we are projecting. And so as long as that number reflects what's inside the urban growth boundary, I guess a lot of feedback from our cities. All right.
And I understand the legally defensible cushion, 50 is too high, but the zero sounds to me like we got no margin, and isn't 10% in that range legally defensible? Isn't that a reasonable number for us to include? Why wouldn't we default to that number, and then we can always deviate from that as we gain more in? Rather than start with zero, I'm inclined to start with 10 from the little amount that's communicated here.
I would take that direction unless any of my city counterparts wants to chime in.
I think that's what we'll know a lot more when the cities look to see what they're projecting, if they need a bigger UGA. Boundary. If not, we're looking at something more like Lagler, but we have to have that space to create that. That's a high number that we're looking for, so we don't want to run short of land.
Yeah. I have utmost respect for this board, and I will go with 10%. I'm just asking our cities to chime in, but that will give them that same flexibility that they've also asked for. So yeah.
I'm not saying 10% might not be it either. So we're looking for a lot of feedback from our cities.
Yeah, but if the board says 10% for commercial and industrial, I will walk away with the city working on that number. Right.
Yes, and certainly we welcome the city's feedback on this. Is this an opportunity time now, or do we show you?
Yes, I'm done, Commissioner. Yeah.
Okay, so for now, and certainly want to invite the feedback from the cities, and it doesn't look like we have time to do that right now, but as a starting point, I'm inclined to go with 10%, and certainly welcome the feedback to modify that. I'm not very comfortable with 0% because I want to make sure we have enough land that's really buildable for commercial.
I think we're in agreement there, but I think that we'll get a better number with the feedback from the cities, but I don't think zero is not going to make it.
Yeah, so for preliminary-wise...
That's good. I appreciate that, Commissioner. I invited my city counterpart to sit at the table. I know we got 2 minutes. I'll give them that opportunity to just...
Sure, yes.
Just a couple of quick perspectives on market facts. I really want the whole assumption...
Into the microphone so they can hear you, Bianca.
Certainly a 10% I think from a policy standpoint, one overall concern about market factor is it has in the past yielded to
the capital facility plans. And so, from a market factor, really all the assumptions are a real concern that happened in the early years of the period you see up there is there was a lot of land, the amount of growth exceeded what was planned. Many factors involved in that. But certainly, I believe one of the key factors, particularly from 1994 to 2004, is the original set of assumptions, including market factor, were very generous to be with a good policy intent of being, let's make sure we have enough land. But one of the consequences of that is when you do get more growth beyond totals that you have a plan for, there's certainly some consequences there. So as a general practice, you know, I think we would encourage doing as you have done, using the job forecast to reflect your policy intent, which you did with the jobs, so the highest number of options on the table. Because then that everyone knows that's the number we're planning for, the capital facilities plans would be around that, public expectations are around that. When a lot of additional land is added for whatever assumptions to include good intent, that's what's happening in the past. There are some negative consequences of that.
Think that we'd have a larger consequence if we underestimated. Because if we underestimate and you don't have the land, then you artificially inflate the value of that land, which takes us out of competition with other areas that might place businesses that would create our jobs.
True, and I think there's a couple of safety valves within the system. Probably the biggest is that all of the assumptions are geared toward the 20-year land supply. And you have to update that now.
Yeah.
And I think that issue was recognized, I think, over this 20-year period of hey, we can invest for improvements, but the county update these boundaries more frequently, and instead you see that's happening. And so if you see that kind of effect occurring, there is a safety valve to act on it without having the land.
Mm-hmm. Was there, real quick, and get more word in here.
I think, speaking for Washougal, we're comfortable with the assumptions that we have. You know, we're not looking at, we're thankful for all the work that's been done and the staff that's been done on that. The true thing of it, you know, Washougal, we're sitting on 120 acres in our urban growth boundary, in our city limits right now, industrial. We have 600 acres in our urban growth boundary for employment. We may lose 80 of that depending on a court case, but still, I think that we're not looking at expanding those boundaries beyond them. And I think that by looking at the jobs part of it, we can still make that work, you know, very comfortably. I think if you start adding the 10% on to that, and then that adds to that boundary, that then reaches into our pockets, if you will, and that we have to then go out and start proofing it up through our capital facility planning. And that's not an effort right now that the city is interested in going after.
I believe each one will be different. Each city will have different needs and different plans, and we expect that. We're looking forward to it. Anybody else? A quick comment?
Very quick comment. As you know, the center is looking for a small expansion of industrial lands at the freeway interchange, and I appreciate the fact that you're leaving that policy in that encourages flexibility for the city. And if adding a 10% market factor for industrial will help bolster our case, I'm sure the city council will support.
Anybody else?
Is that mic on?
Is the button out?
Hello?
No, button.
There we go. I talk a lot anyway. You know, I'd concur with, you know, my city partners here overall that, you know, Oliver was very gracious in offering some additional time for us to ground truth the jobs allocation that we discussed last week. So, it does have a ripple effect if we start adding additional pressures for the cities to have to add more lands. We had tied up some capital city plan updates within recent years, and most cities have limited resources in being able to do comprehensive planning updates to the scale and level what we did a number of years ago. So if through the job forecast that's we're getting what we want for economic development, you know, and we say we can accommodate that in our current boundaries, we're comfortable with that. But at least speaking for Camus's perspective. So. So.
All right. Oliver, thank you. A work in progress. We're looking to hear more from our cities and the county. And
thank you, commissioners, and thank you, my city partners. I think what I'm taking from this, we will make some changes based on what we heard today. And I think the direction, the only change here is the 10% for commercial and industrial. So this gives us some firm ground to complete our allocation discussion with the cities, and we'll be coming back to you in June. That's going to be in a hearing, so they will have the opportunity to testify. But we are working through to complete the allocation and begin to develop the land use scenarios.
Thank you, everybody, and thank you all.
Thank you, commissioners.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.